community radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Interchange here on WFHB. I am your host, Ryan Dawes, here in South Central Indiana. We have many things that represent us and give us a common ground, a common sense of identity upon which to relate or commiserate on, depending on what it is. From an outsider's perspective, we have unofficial uniting symbols like maybe corn or basketball. Now, for those of us who have lived here a little bit longer or worked here, from within the community, we have things like maybe limestone or rolling hills, local agriculture and business, or even a fish-shaped weather vane that can all represent us and give us a common ground. Well, now, thanks to One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond, we now have specific books that can relate us all in the local community and provide for us a shared experience, which is, in this case, the simple act of reading a book. Now, tonight on Interchange, we're going to talk about One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond, local literacy and reading trends, and then even reveal the 2013 One Book, One Bloomington selection. We went straight to the experts for this conversation. We have in studio with us Sarah Laughlin, the director of the Monroe County Public Library, and Kathy Lozier, who is a librarian at the Bloomington High School North. Thank you, ladies, for joining us here on Interchange.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So first of all, let's hear why books. Why not a One Book, One Television Show and Beyond? Or One Television Show, One Bloomington? Or why not focus on, you know, a specific another activity like fishing in Bloomington? Or why not knitting? Why are we rallying around the activity of reading a single book at that? Start with you, Sarah.
Some of us do rally around knitting and quilting. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of communal activities anyway. But
of course.
Reading a book is typically a sort of isolated, private pleasure. And I think when you read a really good book, a really challenging, thought-provoking book, you just want to talk about it with somebody else. And there are lots and lots of those challenging books, but it's really fun. It's sort of a chance in a lifetime, I think, to read a book with a whole lot of other people at the same time and get to talk to them. You sort of have a common language, a moment to consider the ideas in this book.
What are your thoughts, Kathy?
I think it's a starting point for people to have those conversations that maybe they wouldn't have just passing each other or just meeting socially. And I think to have a common book to read gives people the opportunity to discuss some weighty issues. And that's what One Book, One Bloomington is all about, is making sure that we have a selection of titles that the community can vote on and then proceed to vote with the one that they think would bring more discussion or meaningful discussion or topics that sometimes you may not approach. And this year on the list, we had six titles that were all banned books. And so I think just the idea that these books were banned somewhere is going to give a lot of meaningful discussions about the topics that are inside the books.
Now, what is the framework provided by One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond that facilitates these conversations? You mentioned voting. Mm-hmm. What's the framework, I guess the essence of the activities, or what are the activities that provide this framework for conversation?
Well, there are many book clubs in Bloomington, and I think that they will embrace the One Book, One Bloomington they have to use this book during their sessions, their meetings, to have that discussion. So there are a lot of activities, and I think Sarah has the list of the activities.
I have the list of ones we know about so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's hear it, and then we can also repeat them later in the show if you didn't catch them, if you weren't able to write them down at the first part. We'll repeat these later. But yeah, please share with us the activities.
All right, I will. what I will say is that there are, we know about five book groups that are going to be discussing the winning book. Ex Libris at Barnes & Noble on Wednesday, February 20th at 6:30. Books Plus at the library, 2 o'clock on Sunday, March 3rd. Gen to Gen, that's the Bloomington High School mm-hmm. North Book Club, probably not open to the public. I don't know, Kathy.
Well, actually, what it is, it's our North Book Club always uses the One Book, One Bloomington in their March meeting. And then we ask the students to invite somebody of a different generation.
Okay,
it's been pretty successful in the past, so they invite a mother, an aunt, or a teacher or something. So we have a generation-to-generation discussion about the One Book, One Bloomington.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. Well, that's on March 26th at 3 o'clock at North, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Beltrace will be discussing the book on April 18th at 1 and at the Lilly Library on Wednesday, April 24th at 4:30. So five book club discussions that we know about at this point. There may be others, and there may be more after we announce the title of the book. And then there is a film series at the library for Wednesdays, and I'll give the dates, but I won't tell the last film because that'll give away the title. But the first one will be on March 20th, Children of Men. And the topic is The Future Ain't What It Used to Be, a cinematic look at dystopian and future societies. Fahrenheit 451 on March 27th and Soylent Green on April 3rd. And tonight's winner will be on April 10th, so the grand finale. Mm-hmm.
So you can get an idea of what the common threads are by looking at the choices that you made, and you used the common theme of books that were banned books at a certain point in history by a certain group or a certain government. Why choose banned books, and then talk a little bit about also how people voted on it?
The steering committee decided that it would be interesting to look at, you know, the whole idea of intellectual freedom and the right to read, and decided that, you know, we wanted the nominees this year to be books that had been challenged, censored, or banned. And so we came up with, and I'm trying to remember them all, a list of books from the community and from the One Book, One Bloomington. We had on the list Slaughterhouse-Five, Jungle, Secret Agent by Conrad, and I'm missing the others, and I won't tell you what the one that won yet. We'll wait till the end. But the idea was to stimulate the discussion about what are the issues that people wrestle with? What are the issues currently that people are talking about in terms of, you know, what the difference of opinions, and to be able to read and not be restricted about what you read, I think is a fundamental right in the United States. And I talk to my students a lot about that, saying that, you know, you, when you come into the library, it's your choice to read what you want to read. It's, you have to read certain things for your English classes and other classes. But when you walk across the threshold of the library door, we want you to be exposed to a variety of ideas and a variety of themes, and so it's your choice. And I think it's befitting that today we are looking at those books that have been banned. American Library Association always has Banned Book Week, and they always talk about the intellectual freedom and the right to read. And so I think it was just appropriate for One Book, One Bloomington to make that kind of an overriding theme, that any book that's on the list for voting would be a book that would be challenging or would be banned or deals with controversial issues.
Now, Sarah, how is it like talking about these books if they are challenging or they are, as Kathy said, challenging?
You know, I think sometimes it's easier when there's a story to talk about or a particular situation. People stay away from some issues sometimes just because it's uncomfortable. But when you have an opportunity to sort of explore it through someone else's voice, it allows you perhaps to become more sympathetic to other points of view than you know than mm-hmm. what you started out mm-hmm. with, or to you know, just to experience it in a different way that is just between you and the page. you know, it doesn't say, you know, you might discover some nuances in your thinking. It might complicate your thinking a little bit if you're, you know, it, and that's, I think, a wonderful thing when that happens.
I also think it's kind of a safe way to explore ideas is when you're looking and reading through a page and a character that's been developed by an author and they're dealing with some weighty issues. I think it's a safe way for people to explore their own thought process and their own feelings. And I always think that reading is like opening your mind and that exposing yourself to different ideas through characters and plot and conflict, I think is a good way to begin that discussion within your own mind and then to be able to articulate it with other people.
Now, do you think that when you are trying to elicit these discussions about weighty issues or maybe an issue that's more controversial, do you think that having a work of fiction is easier to tackle these issues over a work of nonfiction? Do you think it's easier to address a certain idea if it takes place within a made-up universe versus is it more or less difficult to talk about it if we're talking about past or current actual events?
I don't know. You know, I guess I like the long form of writing. I like that. I like the language and the opportunity to really get into another world. I'm a reader of the Sunday New York Times. It takes me all week to read the Sunday New York Times.
It's about 6 inches thick.
Yes.
Sometimes the articles in there, which are not fiction, right? They are the best reporting in the world, probably. Might take an hour to read an article. I read one recently about
reread sometimes
an avalanche and some people that got caught in an avalanche out in the Canadian Rockies or somewhere, and so that was a true story. But my feet were really cold just reading that article. I mean, it was very realistic. So that was a case of that's not something I can see myself doing, skiing off the extreme slopes there, but I got a real sense of what that was like. So I'm not sure it matters to me whether it's fiction or true, but I suppose if it's a really difficult issue, then then having it be fiction allows it to be a little more neutral.
And maybe you would be able to then talk about the morality of it rather than a specific person that maybe you voted for or didn't vote for, and,
right.
and it's less personal, and you could talk more about the ideas.
I think I agree with Sarah that, you know, I think it's everybody's personal preference of how they want to tackle a subject or tackle their opinion about an issue, whether they read nonfiction or whether they read fiction. I like to read both. And I know working with high school students, I have some very strong opinions of students who say, I really only want to read nonfiction, and I don't want to read fiction. And we have that even in our book club. There are people that want to read memoirs, and there are groups of students who say, I don't want to read memoirs. I want to read fiction. I want to read a novel. I want to read prose. I'm not interested in the real. I'm not interested in nonfiction. So I think it's a personal preference.
Sure. Now we are talking about One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond with Sarah Laughlin and Kathy Lozier. Now talk a little bit about what you think is, why do you think this is good for the community? And also, what do you have a personal motivation? Do you think this will actually get more people into your respective libraries?
Well, I sure hope so. We have lots of copies of the book.
I'm not sure about the high school. I think our reading, our book club, you know, is always interested in reading One Book, One Bloomington. But I do think it is, if you talk to the bookstores, I think it does help with, you know, circulating that book or buying that book that's been made a One Book, One Bloomington title. And there are Chicago, actually, in December. And I saw big signs in Chicago where they were reading Book Thief. And we read that several years ago as One Book, One Bloomington. It was a very good book to stimulate the discussion about, you know, this book was told from the point of view of death. And so I did have to buy like 12 and 13 copies of it for our students at North. And the teachers read it. We had a great discussion about that. So I do think it is kind of a motivator to get people to what do I want to read next, or help people to expand what they normally read.
Nice, excellent. So can we get this, will we be able to get this one book for one book, one Bloomington at most of the local stores?
I think so, yes.
It's an award-winning book. It should always be in print.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, so one of the problems that I feel like I run into within my own social circles is you want to have a conversation about some sort of media or art that you're consuming, you know, and it's whether it be a book or a movie or a band. And because we have such intensely huge access to all forms of media, we have all these, we have way more options. We have exponentially larger options with what we can choose to consume. So I feel like it's harder to find those one things, like that one Netflix movie or that one book or that one band that, oh, my buddy has heard too, and not because I recommended it. So I think this is an interesting way in which it is, heavy-handedly suggests this and gives us this common ground to start on, and you can both consume it from a fresh perspective starting out.
Well, and I think the other thing about a great book and a good author is that you ask lots of questions about both, right? You went, well, where did this thing come from? And has this person written any more?
Sure.
I'm going to read more by this person. And then after a while, you say, well, which one of these is the author's story, because this author has written books, they're wildly different.
Yes.
And you and then I become curious about where do those come from? And so I think a good book sometimes drives you back to look for another one by that same person or another one like that. And I think it's kind of a spreading, you know, it's like
it's like a
dropping
ripple.
A rock in a pool,
it's a
puddle of water.
Slope.
It's
a,
right.
You know, your interests go out from that. We have a couple of wonderful reader's advisory tools at the library that allow you to put in, if I liked this, and it suggests what else I might like. And I've used those several times with great success.
And if you notice, even like you said, the different forms of formats, media, you look at the number of sites that have popped up about, you know, people, I think when they read, they do want to share their thoughts and have a discussion. And it could be in a book club format, or it could be like looking at Goodreads or looking at all those different online sources or reading reviews to find out, what do I read next? And so I think this One Book, One Bloomington is an opportunity for people to branch out, share in the commonality of this one book, and then have discussions.
We are speaking with Kathy Lozier from the Bloomington High School North, as well as Sarah Laughlin, the director of the Monroe County Public Library, and we're talking about One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond. And you are listening to Interchange here on WFHB. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after a few minutes.
Support for WFHB comes from Taste of India, a locally owned and operated restaurant featuring a lunch buffet open 7 days a week with a variety of vegan and vegetarian options. Taste of India is located at 316 East 4th Street, next to the fire station. You can dine in or call ahead for takeout or home delivery. 333-1399.
And we're back. You are listening to Interchange here on WFHB. I'm your host, Ryan Dawes. Tonight at the Firehouse Studios, I have with me Kathy Lozier from Bloomington High School North and Sarah Laughlin, who is the director of the Monroe County Public Library. Now, we've tiptoed around it too much. I want to reveal the 2013 One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond book selection. Which one of you wants to do the honors?
I can do the drum roll.
Yes.
Okay, and the 2013 One Book, One Bloomington selection is The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
Excellent. Now, talk a little bit about how this book fit into what we were talking about earlier. We said all these books that you provided as voting options to be the one book for One Book, One Bloomington, they all fit into a framework of being banned books, having heavy, weighty, controversial subjects that you're going to have to talk about and tackle in these different groups. Talk about how The Handmaid's Tale fits into this category of banned books.
Well, I'll just read a little summary of it, and then you'll probably be able to tell why.
Good.
But it's a work of speculative fiction written by Canadian author Margaret Atwood, first published in 1985, set in the near future in a totalitarian Christian theocracy, which has overthrown the United States government. It explores themes of women in subjugation and the various means by which they gain agency, meaning, you know, the ability
empowerment.
To function. Empowerment. And the novel's title was inspired by Geoffrey Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales, because The Handmaid's Tale is one of the tales included in his stories. So it does have a literary reference. I have a collection of books that have literary references, so I really like that. But I think because it deals with a Christian theocracy, that religious point of view was challenged in some places. There is illicit sex in the book, so that was probably another reason for it. And it is a dystopian future. It's an all around kind of depressing,
society, really.
Brutal, you know, view of the future.
Mm-hmm. And we should mention it's not a distant living on the moon future. It's a near future.
Actually, she wrote it in 1985, and when I read through it, and it was talking about in the year 2005, and I went, whoa.
We made it past that, yeah.
And then in the back, there is an appendix which references it to 2095 or something, like in the future, they're doing a retrospective look at the transcripts and the things that they found of the main protagonist in the story. And it's really interesting to see how at the end, it's like they're studying it, that it was so far in the past.
Now, you were talking a little bit about how the library, the MCPL, offers this service of, you can give you suggestions. What are some other books that are similar to this? What is this book? What other books does this book, The Handmaid's Tale, remind you of?
Well, I think it's been compared with George Orwell's 1984.
Mm-hmm. Sure, because there is a secret police they refer to in the book as the Eyes.
Yeah.
Right. And and again, that's a not too distant future where things didn't come out the way we wanted them to come out.
And I think that when you look at dystopian novels, there are running themes that you can pick up in any other. You know, like the society has broken down and someone has gained power and felt that this was the way to improve society because it was breaking down. And I think that's a running theme that you find in a lot of dystopian novels. I don't think it's really science fiction.
Yeah.
It's speculative fiction, as Sarah said, about
happens. She coined that phrase, I think, to say this is not on a distant planet.
Right.
Or, you know, dependent on technology that we dreamed up that is not existent. This could happen tomorrow.
And it's based on the idea of, you know, gaining power and people losing power and not being empowered. You know, it's like Fahrenheit 451. You know, reading was not considered, it was banned. You couldn't read, you know, burn books. people weren't allowed to read in The Handmaid's Tale. You were supposed to not be literate. Only the high commander could have, you know, access to literacy or books, things like that.
Sure, good. Mm-hmm. So you're talking a little bit, explaining more about this dystopian society and what our protagonist in this story is. Would one of you please introduce us to the protagonist in this? How do we identify with her? And then mm-hmm. what kind of situation is she in?
Well, just her name of Fred, O-F-F-R-E-D. She doesn't have her own real name. So she's basically dehumanized in that, you know, she is just a person that is pretty much owned by the commander, and his name is Fred. And so she is of Fred. And so right then you know that she doesn't have any kind of basic rights, and she is just there as the handmaid. And the handmaid basically is there to produce children, procreation. That's the only reason why you have sex.
And did she have a choice to?
No. There's been some kind of horrible, toxic explosion. Mm-hmm. I think in the battle of this group to take over the United States, where they've killed the president and members of Congress and they've blown things up, there's been a horrible, toxic cost to that. And so many women, most women are infertile. Mm-hmm. Because of the chemical,
aftermath or what was happening with the toxic society.
So they very carefully select women who are, you know, still capable and young enough and everything. And so they become the handwives. And then there are the wives, handmaids. The wives mm-hmm. are the actual wives of the commanders. Many of them are older or infertile, mm-hmm. I guess. There are the daughters, mm-hmm. no sons, mm-mm. no baby boys. Mm-hmm. And then there are the aunts, who are kind of the trainers of the handmaids. They are the indoctrinators. The Marthas, mm-hmm. who are the older infertile women who are the housemaids, do all the cooking and laundry and everything. And then there are the Econo wives, who are the lower class mm-hmm. women. So it's very hierarchical and structured, and everyone has very specific duties and limits.
And roles and what they can and cannot do.
I think
do.
You get the feeling in the book mm-hmm. that every one of those roles is very limiting.
Yes.
It's not all that much fun mm-mm. to be the wife or to be the...
Even the commander, who's supposed to have all this power, is very limited and controlled by the theocracy, basically.
And mm-hmm. unhappy. And yes. ultimately, because he has power, has a sort of alter life mm-hmm. that he conducts that's still reminiscent of the time beforehand, and for which he seems quite wistful. Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating read, and I think I've been thinking about how I'm going to make it accessible to my book club, and because it's really gritty in certain parts in terms of what happens to the nonconformists in that society.
Right, because
and what's interesting is I read about Margaret Atwood talking about the things that she has written in this book were things that really have transpired historically in the United States, like the Puritan times, where, you know, if you didn't conform to that, you know, you were branded a witch. And then she throws in there also in this book the Quakers, who were the kind of the underground, and they have an underground for women, an underground railroad for women to get out of the situations. And it's the Quakers who are doing that. So she's really created a society based upon past actions and past groups that have happened in the United States.
So and it's this theme of it hasn't happened yet, but there is this possibility that this could be a future.
These situations and these acts and some events and some ways people dealt with things like that, going up against the Puritans, you know, we prosecuted and persecuted the people who didn't think like the Puritans. So she grabbed those ideas and put them into this novel.
And I think if mm-hmm. we think about, the Taliban mm-hmm. now, that is definitely a theocracy and imposing mm-hmm. its very rigid expectations and requirements on women mm-hmm. particularly, or the rape in India mm-hmm. Just within the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
there are you know, in a culture where that was just apparently okay until the international media caught up with it. It's not like you have to look back a couple hundred years to find examples. So I think she takes those as her raw material and then takes off from that.
And we are talking to Sarah Laughlin, the director of the Monroe County Public Library, and Kathy Lozier, who works at Bloomington Nice High School North as a librarian. And we are talking about The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Now, Kathy, I'm interested in how you are going to address this specifically with teenagers, and what sort of ideas do you think your students are going to come up with? What are they going to latch on to and want to share their ideas
about?
Well,
one, it's a banned book. And if you mention banned books, you know, they want to read it. They want to see what is so scandalous that it would have been banned. But I've had a couple students who've already read it, and we've had some discussions. They didn't know it was One Book, One Bloomington, but they knew it was on the nominee list. And I think it really is for a more mature student at the high school. Because I think it's not just about the violence and the sex scenes in there. It's about your empowerment and your ability to feel that you do have power within yourself. And I think that's one of the big themes that I can talk to students about. It's about your rights as a woman. It's about your feelings as a woman. But I don't think it just appeals to girls or women. I think it really is a book that really looks at, you know, when you go too far one way, your counterbalance sometimes goes the opposite way of what you intend. And I think there's great discussion, and I think it's a very timely book in terms of looking at, you know, people looking at certain issues, social issues, and then saying that my way is the only way, and the social issue that I'm dealing with might be, abortion. It might be my rights as a woman, my access to health care, my access to education. And I think it has all that in there. And I think that it would appeal to, I think, a higher intellectual student at the high school.
Now, Sarah, what do you see people engaging with in A Handmaid's Tale in your community at the Monroe County Public Library?
Well,
or even you personally, I'm
curious.
Yeah,
I read it right after it came out, I think, because I was going to a conference where they were doing a one book, one conference.
Which was a library conference. 1985, by the way.
Yes, 1985, and I don't know when this conference was, maybe a little after that. And Margaret Atwood was speaking at the conference. And so they spent the whole, you know, they invited people to read it beforehand and then come together to talk about it. And then her talk was kind of the culminating event. It was the first time I'd ever been to a book discussion group. That's kind of an embarrassing thing to say when you're a librarian, but I had never been in a situation where I could join one or could start one. And so I was very interested in it. I read the book. I was very excited about it. I went to the thing, and first of all, the arrangement of the space wasn't good because you really need to be facing each other. You need to be around a table or in a circle or some thing like that where everyone is equal and has a voice. So this was a conference room with everything set up facing the same direction,
it's
which is
be
not
engaging.
Not good for a conversation
sure.
in the first place. But many people got hung up on the personal, how I felt mm-hmm. while reading it. And we never got to, you know, talking about the author and her other books or talking about the text-to-world connection. How does this book mm-hmm. remind you of what's going on in the world or, you know, now or in other times, or the text-to-text connection, which is how does this book remind you of other books or other mm-hmm. or other stories you're familiar with or other books that this author has written. So I was somewhat disappointed in the book discussion group, and I would hope that those kinds of things would be included on people's list of things to talk about. The book, by the way, at the library is available. We have the Cliff Notes for it. So your students might
yes,
be interested
yeah.
in that. we have it as an ebook, We have it as a book on CD. We have it as in print, and we also have it as a video, because there was a movie made, and it's I watched it last night, and it's it's not the perfect carbon copy of the book. I think there's some things where that it's quite it gives you a quite different feeling than the book, but it does star Natasha Richardson, Faye Dunaway, Robert Duvall. Excellent, excellent.
I think there was another movie too, but I'm not sure what the title. I'm sure it was Handmaid's Tale, but it was a, I think a British version or a Canadian version. Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways to access the thought, the content, the thought in the book, if reading it is not your cup of tea. So I think I hope people do talk about it in that broader context of what would it feel like to be the commander. What would it feel like to be the handmaid? What would it feel like to be the wife? What books does this book remind you of? What other dystopian or, books dealing with these topics remind you of? And perhaps interest people in reading some other books by Margaret Atwood. She has written a whole variety of books. I think 14 other fiction books.
Well, in this book, I mean, it is dealing with some pretty weighty and sometimes tragic issues. But she's quite funny. I've seen some interviews with her, and she has a wonderful sense of humor. She's also a poet. She was born, I believe, in 1939. So she is certainly speaking from experience.
And she had a very unusual childhood, which she talked about when she gave her presentation. Her father was a scientist, and so she grew up in the bogs of northern Canada. She didn't go to school, any kind of formal school, until she was in high school, because his work, they camped,
sure,
basically. And so, like many self-educated children, she read. Reading was her pastime, so she read everything. And then as a student, she has an undergraduate degree in literature, but she also studied at Harvard, worked on her PhD, dropped out before she finished her dissertation. But she's classically educated in terms of the world's great literature. And I think that really comes through in of course, the title of this book, but in many ways in her book. I just read another book that she wrote called, I don't have any idea how you say this, but if you know Penelope, the Greek myth of Penelope, this is the Penelopeiad, or maybe it's the Penelopeiad. I'm not sure. I've never said that out loud before. That happens sometimes. And it's very funny, too, and is a takeoff on that Greek myth. So yes, she writes poetry. She's written several books on writing, and some nonfiction books in her areas of particular interest. So she's a fascinating. She's been at it for 30 years or more. So she's got quite a body of work.
And this one has been reprinted several times. And I think they reprinted it in 2005 with a whole new cover. And so it's still in circulation,
and it's an award winning. It's won a very large number of awards. It won the Governor General's Award in 1985, the first Arthur C. Clarke Award in 1987, nominated for the 1986 Nebula Award. So you can see that it's in that science fiction sector. The 1986 Booker Prize, shortlisted for the Booker Prize, and the 1987 Prometheus Award. But her later title, let me see if I can find it right quick. She has won the Booker Prize with another one of her books. So I think I counted up 20 awards for her 14 fiction titles. So she's no slouch.
So we are talking about Margaret Atwood, who is the author of, among many other things, The Handmaid's Tale, which has been selected by local voters to be the One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond book selection. You are listening to Interchange. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about Margaret Atwood as well as local readers and their choices in the libraries here, both at the local high school and at the county library. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Support for WFHB comes from Warm Up From Within, a 3-day exploration of mind, body, spirit, January 18th through the 20th at the Brown County State Park, Abe Martin Lodge. Warm Up From Within features 10 workshops organized by River Light Yoga, supported in part by a grant from the Brown County Convention and Visitors Bureau. Information, brochures, and tickets online at riverlightyoga.com.
And we're back. You are listening to Interchange here on WFHB. We are talking about books, one book in particular, The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, and its selection as the One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond book selection. I have in studio with me Kathy Lozier from Bloomington High School North, as well as Sarah Laughlin from the Monroe County Public Library. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about you and your respective realms of book consumers. What is currently popular? What are you having a hard time keeping on the shelves in your libraries? Let's start with you, Kathy.
Well, they are dystopian novels. And it's interesting. I had a discussion with a teacher saying, you know, it's really comes in waves of what the genres are. And it seems in the last 4 or 5 years, it's been dystopian novels. And everything from Divergent, Insurgent, Hunger Games, Legend, those are the popular ones in the high school library. And they seem to be dystopian novels. And I was wondering if it's because the kind of unsettling nature of our world today that people escape to dystopian novels. I don't know. I just think it's a fascinating trend right now.
Yeah, I agree. We were looking last year for a book to read at the farmer's market, and a children's book to read at the farmer's market. And we were like, wow, we're going to have to go back a ways to find an innocent butterfly, you know.
Even for children's books.
For children's books. So there are a lot of sort of challenging books for children, even. I guess for adults at the library, mysteries are always at the top of our list. And when I see the national bestseller list, the 5 of the top 10 spots are always taken by a mystery. We can't keep enough graphic novels.
graphic novels are popular at the high school
in the
as well.
Library, and they're being read by all ages, mm-hmm. and they're fiction and nonfiction. They are sometimes covering very weighty, mm-hmm. Weighty topics, but they are graphic. They're like comic books. If you haven't mm-hmm. seen one, you should check one out the next time you're at the library.
A comic book, but it has as many pages
it has
as
frames.
A novel.
It has frames right. like mm-hmm. a comic, like a comic strip.
And it doesn't necessarily mean it's graphic in terms of graphic violence or what it is.
It's just
graphically
like
displayed.
Visual. Right.
One of the real popular ones a few years ago was Persepolis, and it was made into a movie, and it was about the Iran. And then there was... American Born Chinese. That was also a very popular graphic novel. So graphic novels are very popular in the high school as well.
And for me, I'm just sitting here thinking that it's sort of halfway between a movie and a book
and a
because
novel.
There's text,
prose,
but
yes.
there's also visuals mm-hmm. that drive the action. And sometimes it takes a little while to get mm-hmm. used to that, but you find yourself lingering over the picture because they're like a movie. There are many details that carry forward the story that are not texty.
Mouse, the Pulitzer Prize winning by Spiegelman. Mm-hmm. I think that's when the trend of graphic novels really kind of surfaced.
Mm-hmm. No, at least so I graduated from high school in 2003, and then so that just gives you an idea of what generation I'm representing. But when we start learning to read, obviously we have books with lots of illustrations. And then mm-hmm. it seems like, from what I can remember, second or third grade, it's seen as you're kind of graduating into
chapter books.
Yeah. and they have less pictures. mm-hmm. And so what I'm wondering is, especially from your perspective, Kathy, is are you discouraging graphic novels? Because it is kind of seen as a graduation, or you're reading books with huge illustrations on. Is it seen as any... less mentally challenging or...
Oh, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I was challenged probably 10, 12 years ago because I had the idea of graphic novels. Why wouldn't I read prose? Why would I read graphic novels? I'm a high school librarian, young adult literature, you should be reading prose. A student challenged me, well, I'll read this book if you read this graphic novel. I was very moved by that graphic novel. It was Pedro and Me. And it basically was a very touching story about... a man who discovered his roommate was gay and had AIDS. And it was a very weighty topic. And I was impressed with myself that I finished it, but it kept me really intrigued and very engaged. And I think the same thing is when you talk to anybody who has read Mouse, the Pulitzer Prize winning book about the Nazis and the Jewish people. It's very powerful. I think the images help, and I think I wouldn't discourage students from reading graphic novels, and I wouldn't discourage them from being a set of literature, because I do think they're very a good graphic novel is very well done in terms of blending the visual images with the prose.
So it's more.
It's different.
It is different.
It's different.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're focusing on what are the ideas and history and what are the morality and ethics that are being mm-hmm. covered within it, rather than, what does the page look like?
Mm-hmm. Now, for a rich vocabulary experience, mm-hmm. which I love, mm-hmm.
sure.
I'm kind of a word freak. You can't beat a good book. You know, you have to bring that with mm-hmm. you. I think to the more graphic experiences. I still like the writing as well.
Well, and it just seems like they're two different art forms. Like you may even even be comparing mm-hmm. apples and oranges here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
that's mm-hmm. interesting. So, talk a little bit about. I want to talk about other formats at the library and what are some current trends that each of you are seeing. Are we seeing a gradual separation from books like paper,
print versus,
are we seeing
readers?
Are we seeing high schoolers
read Kindles?
I'm
seeing more and more high schoolers bring their Kindles, Nooks, iPads to school. But I still have a group of students who, because I had received a grant a few years back, and we have Nooks and Kindles that they can check out. And I have a group of students who say, I don't want to read that on a e-reader. I want the book. But I have a whole group of students who continually have their Kindles out and they're reading, And they like that because it's easy access. Sure. It's quick. They can get it downloaded.
What do you see, Sarah, at the Monroe County Public Library?
Well, we just did a survey. We just completed our strategic plan last year, and part of that was a survey. And we include some questions about do you have an e-reader, and how many e-books have you downloaded in the last year, because we wanted to get a sense. There was a recent national study by the Pew Research Center about reading and e-reading. And we wanted to, so we used the same questions that they used. And I believe in the national study, it was about 20% of people had an e-reader and had used it in the last year. In our community, it was almost double that. Mm-hmm. If you include phones,
right?
You can read, you can download a book to your smartphone. So if you included, black and white e-readers like a Kindle, or color e-readers like the Nook or the iPad or a smartphone, 40% of our community members had reported that they had the device, and another 10% said they would have it within the next year.
Now, how does that change your job when you get a hold of this data?
Well, we were amazed by that. We thought we might equal the national number. We thought we might be a little ahead of it since we're a pretty well-educated community. But we were amazed that it was, twice as high. So we are ramping up quickly to provide more content in that format. We don't have enough now to respond to
that
demand.
Now, what is that content you're providing for these e-readers?
Right.
E-books. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have we participate in a solution called Overdrive, and they actually manage the digital rights. The big issue is managing the digital rights, because the publishers don't want their content to get away from them. So, so the way this company does that is that you download when you come to the library site, you download a little piece of software. Then you download the book. Only one person can have it at a time. It's like the library model. I was very frustrated with that initially. I'm like, what? It's still there. Why can't more people download it? But of course, they're managing access because of the
they don't want to lose profit share.
Profit. and so you download the book, and then in 3 weeks it goes away. It brings itself back, if you will. So we love that idea. There's no shelving. There's no checking in. There's no
late fees.
No handling.
Right.
And the patrons love it because it can never be late.
Right.
If you're not finished, you just download it again. That's what we're participating in at the present. And I believe that I just got the numbers for 2012, and downloadable content accounted for 4% of our total circulation. We also have downloadable music, though, so it also includes that. So I'm not sure how that plays out. But I think we probably spent 4% of our budget on it. Mm-hmm. So I think we're bumping up against our own limits. I think if we had more, we would circulate it.
So we are talking to Sarah Laughlin from the Monroe County Public Library, as well as Kathy Lozier from Bloomington High School North. This conversation is rooted in One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond, and their selection, or your selection, rather, as the voting public, of Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale. Now, part of One Book, One Bloomington, of course, is the groups in which we can gather around to talk about and engage as a community over this particular book. Can we talk a little bit about, reiterate just one more time, some of the events, and then talk a little bit about other groups that have been involved?
Right. So there are at least 5 discussions of the book.
And I should say, this list, I imagine, would grow. And so you can just, by simply Googling One Book, One Bloomington and Beyond, MCPL, just type that into Google. You'll find what you need
right
as this list
website
grows.
I think our website will be up tomorrow morning with all the information.
Yeah. Great. But you heard it here first.
Heard it here first. So there are a number of book discussions. Barnes & Noble on February 20th, Books Plus at the library on March 3rd at 2 o'clock, at Bloomington North Library Tuesday, March 26th at 3, at Bell Trace, April 18th at 1, at the Lilly Library, April 24th at 4:30. There's also a film series at the library, which will end with The Handmaid's Tale on April 10th. But before that, on March 20th, Children of Men, March 27th, Fahrenheit 451, April 3rd, Soylent Green, all kind of dystopian films based on books.
And the people who help kind of put this together, that we have a list. It is the university, or Indiana University, Boxcar Books, Free University of Monroe County, IU Libraries, MCCSC, and MCPL, and of course WFHB. And did I say Bede?
No, okay. The City of Bloomington.
All right. Bede. So these people have all come together in these groups to pull off One Book, One Bloomington.
And just to remind you, Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale is widely available. It's a book that is easy to find both at the locally owned bookstores as well as the larger chain bookstores. It's easy to find Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sarah Laughlin and Kathy Lozier. Mm-hmm. Well, you are listening to Interchange, that we are about out of time. You can find out more information, as I said, on One Book, One Bloomington by simply Googling One Book, One Bloomington, MCPL. And that'll give you all the information that you'll need. Today's episode of Interchange was produced by myself, Lewis Malone, and Allison Bechtesh. All of our news and news programming and public affairs programs, including tonight's show, can be found online by visiting wfhb.org/news. For WFHB, I'm Ryan Dawes. Good night.
Good.
We're safe.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.
This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, broadcasting independently from the John Waldron Arts Center, which is owned and operated by Ivy Tech Community College Bloomington, a proud supporter of community radio. Good evening, everyone. It is 7 p.m. in 2-1 now here on the Eastern Coast, which is the South Central Rolling Hills of Bloomington, Indiana, South Central Indiana. And top of the hour ushers in the Jazz Menagerie. I am your host, Mr. In-Between, Steve Prestigious, and the venerable and all-around great brother William Morris asked me to fill in for him tonight, and I thought that that was super sweet of him, and I'm really excited to be here. I'm trying to temper my exultation at hosting tonight's show with a degree of smooth jazz, because I realize you're here for the Jazz Menagerie and not my mania. So we're going to have a good time, I think. Brother William has hooked me up with a lot of CDs. I'm going to play a little bit of my stuff. And between the two of us, I bet this tonight will be pretty good. If you're cooking dinner and chilling and having a nice conversation, we will try to provide some atmosphere for you that will be nice. So keep it tuned here to WFHB. Tonight's low is going to be 22 degrees. It's currently, let's see what it is. Let's refresh this and get the most up-to-date weather. It's 31 degrees. I'm surprised it's that warm. It's 31 degrees under overcast skies. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is going to be mostly sunny with a high of 39. Tomorrow night's low is going to be 25. Thursday, highs is going to be 37 and a low of 22. And then we're going to warm up to the 40s on Friday and Saturday. We're looking at a slight chance of rain on Martin Luther King Day. But otherwise, it's going to be mostly sunny and clear for us here in Bloomington, Indiana. WFHB is a media sponsor for the 6th Annual Percussive Dance Extravaganza, taking place on Thursday, January 17th at Rhino's All Ages Club. Doors open at 7 p.m. Concert begins at 7:30. The performance showcases the rhythmic footwork of a host of dancers with live traditional music led by Jamie Gans and Tamara Lowenthal. This year's special guest is Brad Leftwich, who will be joined by Sam Bartlett, Jim Nelson, Dito Norris, Gray Larson, and many more. Advanced tickets are available at Blooming Foods East and West or by calling 812-219-1890. All right, we're going to crack straight on with the music here. Please do feel free to give me a call at 323-1200 if you'd like to hear something this evening on the Jazz Menagerie. I am in an accommodating mode, and I just bet that I will be able to get you where you want to be. Right now, we're going to hear one of my favorite tunes from Ella Fitzgerald, and this one is called It Ain't Necessarily So. You're listening to the Jazz Menagerie here on WFHB. Thanks for tuning in.